Well, tonight we're starting a new sermon series. We completed a study of Paul's letter to the Ephesians last Sunday evening. And tonight we're going to be starting a series in the book of Proverbs. So I invite you to turn with me to Proverbs chapter 1, verses 1 through 7. Proverbs 1, 1 through 7. This is the prologue to the book of Proverbs. Listen to God's holy word. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. To know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight, to receive instruction in wise dealing, in righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the simple, knowledge and discretion to the youth. Let the wise hear and increase in learning, and the one who understands obtain guidance. To understand a proverb and a saying, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. This is the word of the Lord. It's interesting that the book of Proverbs is really the most practical book in the entire Bible. I think that that is something that can legitimately be said. It's interesting that that is the case. And yet at the same time, I think that Christians sometimes have a hard time with the book of Proverbs. It's sometimes not necessarily an easy book to read. It is a book that needs to be read in a particular way. It's not necessarily a difficult book to read. It's nothing like the book of Revelation, for example. That's a difficult book. But the book of Proverbs isn't difficult in that way. It presents a different kind of challenge to us. And I think that the challenge comes from the kind of literature that it is. And basically, it's poetry. And we are living at a particular point in history and a particular culture that doesn't really value poetry very much. There have been lots of different reports on reading, and there was one called Reading at Risk. A government agency did this. It was talking about the decline of reading and how fewer and fewer people are doing any reading nowadays. Over the past 10 years or so, actually, there's been an increase in some reading, but the one category of reading that continues to go down is poetry. Nobody's reading poetry these days. And the thing is, you know, if you want to appreciate a piece of poetry, you have to be willing to spend some time on it. That's really the key to poetry. Some poetry is very difficult to understand, and you really need some help in understanding it. But oftentimes, it's simply a matter of just slowing down and listening to the poet. What is he saying? Ponder what he's saying. Poets are not interested in simply conveying information. You know, that's the opposite of poetry. That's what you do in prose. You just say it, okay? Well, in poetry, it's not like that. You actually purposely try to be indirect in what you're trying to say. Poets purposely communicate their ideas in an indirect manner because they want you to slow down and reflect upon what they're saying and look at it from different angles. It's kind of like, you know, holding a jewel up and just looking at it for a few moments, just inspecting it. Poets often keep saying the same thing in a slightly different manner, and that's especially the case with Hebrew poetry. The same thing repeated in a slightly different way from line to line, or sometimes a contrast. I'll be talking about that in just a moment. So if you want to get the most out of the book of Proverbs, really the most basic thing that you need to do is you need to be willing to spend a little time on it. Just looking at one proverb at a time, thinking about it, being patient, and taking time to reflect upon what it means, what that particular proverb is saying. and how it applies to your life. The book of Proverbs is actually a great place to begin starting to memorize Scripture. I would certainly recommend over the course of this sermon series that you select some Proverbs that I'll be preaching on. For example, verse 7 of this passage would be a very good proverb to memorize. And just recite it over and over. Maybe write it on an index card so that you can carry it around with you while you're driving. You know, look at it while you're driving. No, don't do that. While you're stopped at the light, you know, look at it, you know, and then somebody will honk the horn at you. Hey, I'm memorizing a proverb. You know, but and ponder it. Think about it as you go about your day. I think if you do that, you'll find that this book is incredibly practical. Now, because of the unique nature of the book of Proverbs, I'm not going to preach straight through it as I do in almost all of my other sermon series. I probably will handle the first 9 chapters of the book that way. They are conducive to that kind of treatment. But chapters 10 through 31, except for a couple of sections in those chapters, it would be very difficult to do that because they're just a collection of individual proverbs on all kinds of various topics. And so what I will be doing instead is when we get to that point in our study, I'll be identifying the dominant themes, the predominant themes that Proverbs covers. And then I'll be preaching sermons on those themes and the various things that the book of Proverbs has to say about that particular topic. Say, for example, marriage. Okay, Proverbs has a lot to say about marriage. And so we'll be looking at some of those different things in one of the sermons. Speech, you know, the tongue, the use of the tongue. Well, that's a prominent theme in Proverbs. We'll definitely spend at least one sermon, maybe more than one sermon, dealing with that topic. So tonight, as we study this prologue to the book of Proverbs, our focus is going to be on the subject of wisdom in general. What is wisdom? How is wisdom obtained? Who needs wisdom? What is the foundation of wisdom? Well, those are the questions that are addressed in the passage that is before us tonight. And if you're if you're following along on the outline in your prayer guide, those are basically the 4 sections of the outline of tonight's sermon. So the opening verse of the book of Proverbs identifies Solomon as the compiler of this collection of the sayings of the wise. Now, a great deal of the book was written by Solomon himself, although some sections are identified as the work of other authors, specifically in chapter 30 and chapter 31, 2 other men are identified as the authors of those respective sections. So Solomon is the compiler of this collection, and he wrote a lot of them himself. What is a proverb? Well, a proverb is simply a short, pithy, memorable saying that expresses some kind of truth. And so, of course, you know, there are extra-biblical proverbs, non-biblical proverbs. You know, a stitch in 9... Wait, no, that's not it. A stitch in time saves 9, right? You know, and Benjamin Franklin, what was his famous proverb? God helps those who help themselves. You know, always remember that's not in the Bible. I've had a number of conversations with people who think it is. I say, where? Show me where. It's not there. So a proverb is just a short, pithy, memorable saying that expresses some truth. Now, because Proverbs was composed in Hebrew, it employs the key feature of Hebrew poetry. And the key feature, the key literary feature of Hebrew poetry is not rhyme. And that's very good for us because it would be much more difficult to translate. You know, if the key feature of a poem is rhyme, it makes it a lot more challenging to translate it into another language. Instead, the key feature of Hebrew poetry is something that's called parallelism. Parallelism. And in parallelism, what the poet does is he states one thought in the first line of a couplet in the poem. And then in the next line in the poem, he matches that thought, or echoes it, or expands upon it, or sets a contrast to it. And you often find that in the book of Psalms, and you frequently see it in the book of Proverbs. Two or sometimes three lines that are grouped together, or maybe even more once in a while. And the lines kind of build upon one another. A thought is introduced, and then it's developed a little bit more in the next line. And then maybe if it's more than a two-line couplet, it's going on a little bit more. So the second line in the pair somehow develops the idea that's introduced in the first line. Sometimes it expands upon that idea. Sometimes it sets something in contrast to it. One other thing, just in general, about Proverbs is that it should be noted that while Proverbs are observations about what usually happens in life, they are not a promise of what will always happen in every single situation. And that's very important to remember. These are not necessarily to be taken as absolute promises of what always happens in every single situation. Sometimes it just depends on the context, as we'll see in just a moment with one example I'm going to give. Now, the purpose of the book of Proverbs is stated in verse 2. The purpose of Proverbs is to know wisdom and instruction, to understand words of insight. What is wisdom? Well, in the Bible, wisdom is not just a matter of head knowledge. It's not just a matter of having lots and lots and lots of education or learning. A person could have tons and tons of education and be a fool in the biblical sense. And a person could have very little education and be very wise in the biblical sense. Now, of course, this is not, saying, you children, don't worry about your education. Okay, don't go home and tell your parents you don't need to go to school. Okay, that's not the point here. Biblical wisdom, though, is immensely practical. You could say it's practical wisdom. It is skill for living. It's about learning how to navigate life and the many different nuances of life. And you need that. You need more than just rules in order to make your way through life, because there are lots of situations where rules don't necessarily apply. You just need something more than that. And the Bible provides us with that in the wisdom literature of the Bible. And really, understanding that helps us to understand some of the Proverbs that people have a hard time with. Probably one of the best examples of a problematic section in Proverbs is Proverbs 26, 4 and 5. In Proverbs 26, 4, it says this: "Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself." Okay, so don't answer a fool according to his folly. But then in the very next verse, it says this: "Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes." Well, which is it? Come on, tell me. What am I supposed to do? When I meet a fool, am I supposed to answer him according to his folly? Or am I not supposed to answer according to his folly? Well, it depends. It depends. It depends on a variety of factors, and you need wisdom to discern which approach you should take in specific encounters that you have with fools. Right? Now, we can learn a great deal about the nature of wisdom simply by looking at the nouns that are used in this passage. So I want to just take a moment and look at a couple of the major nouns that are used in the passage. The Hebrew term insight in verse 2, the very end of verse 2, that has to do with the ability to discern between good and evil. Insight into that distinction between what is right and what is wrong. Wise dealing in verse 3. Wise dealing means knowing how to conduct your practical affairs, the practical aspects of your life, in an appropriate manner. Now the words righteousness and justice and equity at the end of verse 3, they speak to the moral aspects of wisdom. There is a moral aspect to wisdom. Prudence in verse 4 can also be translated as shrewdness. Shrewdness. You don't often think of shrewdness as something that necessarily a commendable quality, but there are situations in which a certain kind of shrewdness is necessary. Jesus even said, be as shrewd as serpents or as wise as serpents and as innocent as doves. And so prudence is a matter of having good tactics as you make your way through life. That's what prudence is, having good tactics to make your way, to navigate your course through life. And discretion in verse 4 is similar to that. Discretion is the ability to see through temptations so that you don't get suckered by them. You can kind of practice the quality of discretion when you watch television. Okay, we watch television, there's all those advertisements, and practice discretion by asking, what are they trying to get me to do? What are they trying to manipulate me into buying? And what kind of buttons are they trying to push in order to get me to do that? It's a good way to practice discretion. Don't get suckered in by those things, but certainly don't get suckered in by sin and all of the ways it tries to trap you. Also, wisdom enables us to understand riddles. The end of verse 6. I think that what Solomon means there is it helps us to begin to make sense of some of life's mysteries. We don't understand absolutely everything, but we can maybe at least begin to find some sense of resolution as we pursue wisdom. So, as you can see, wisdom is highly useful. It is very practical. And that is the point that Solomon wants to impress upon us here in this prologue. As he speaks about the nature of wisdom, he also wants us to see the value of wisdom so that we will do whatever it takes to obtain it. He wants to incite this covetousness within us, a godly covetousness, a desire for wisdom, so that we will do whatever it takes to get it. He wants us to covet wisdom. Well, this brings us to our second point. And the second point is what the passage has to say about how wisdom is obtained. How do you get wisdom? Now, notice that the word instruction appears all throughout the passage. It appears three times in these seven verses. And then there's a synonym. The word learning also appears one more time. So instruction is central to how wisdom is obtained. Instruction is training. And really this emphasis upon instruction is emphasized even more by the verbs that are used in the passage. The verb receive. You have to receive instruction. Give. Instruction is something that is given. Hear, obtain. Instruction is something that has to be listened to, has to be received. It's something that has to be given by someone who knows something more than you do. And so if you want to obtain wisdom, the point that Solomon is making here in these seven verses is you're going to have to work for it. If you want to obtain wisdom, you're going to have to work for it. It doesn't just happen. And, you know, really, this shouldn't be surprising. You know, think of other aspects of life. Think of the hours of practice that are required before a person can master a musical instrument. Hours and hours of practice, right? I know some people that are aware of that. Yeah, it takes a lot of practice before a musical instrument can be mastered. Or, you know, think of, you know, a runner who wants to run a marathon. You know, even if you run a couple of miles a day, you can't just say, I'm going to run the Boston Marathon, you know, and just go out and do it. Now, you have to do some specific training or else you're probably going to die, you know, in the marathon itself. You know? You have to train, you have to prepare, you have to work. So you need to be willing to make that kind of investment if you want to obtain wisdom. And like anything else that is worth pursuing, it takes time and effort and patience to become wise. There is one crucial difference, though. One crucial difference between the pursuit of wisdom and the pursuit of mastery and all these other things. You know, there are many pursuits in life that are optional, but the pursuit of wisdom is not one of them. Or at least you shouldn't think of it as being optional. Because as we're going to see in just a few moments, the only other option, if you're not wise, is what? To be a fool. Only two paths, and you're on one or the other. The path of wisdom or the path of folly. Now, the other thing that these verses tell us about the means of obtaining wisdom is that we need wise people to instruct us. And this is suggested by the phrases words of insight and the words of the wise. Somebody speaks these words. And actually, in the next few chapters, there's the book of Proverbs is basically a father speaking to his son, imparting wisdom to his son. So we obtain wisdom by listening to the words of those who have traveled the path of wisdom before us. So for children, that means children need to listen to the words of their parents. For students, that means that they need to listen to the words of their teachers. For Christians in general, it means we need to listen to the words of elders and pastors, as well as the words of the many wise saints who have lived before us. This is a key theme in Proverbs, and it really highlights the fact that we aren't born wise. One commentator puts it this way. He says, "No one left to himself ever arrives at wisdom." No one left to himself ever arrives at wisdom. So we need to realize that there are people who know better than we do because they're farther ahead of us on the path of wisdom. And we need to listen to these people if we want to become wise ourselves. And it's not really just about finding one individual either. It's just having a general attitude of teachability and recognizing that in lots of different ways, there are lots of people in the world who may be able to give us some insight into something. And sometimes it might even be a younger person than us who's able to give us some insight. But just having a general attitude of teachability. Now, as for the question of who needs wisdom, there are two categories of people who are mentioned in this passage. And they're mentioned in verses 4 and 5. First of all, there are those who are described as the simple and the youth, and I'm putting them in one category, the simple and the youth. And there is a distinction between the two, but both fit into the general category of those who are lacking in life experience. Now, in Proverbs, the simple person, simple tends to have more of a negative connotation to it in Proverbs. It tends to refer to someone who is gullible, someone who is naive, someone who is aimless and unstable. And all throughout Proverbs, the young person is characterized as someone who is in need of instruction and guidance. And there's a repeated emphasis upon the fact that the young person who doesn't recognize that is a complete fool and is going to get himself in lots and lots of trouble. And of course, we see many, many examples of that, don't we? Sadly. In our world, in our own lives, oftentimes we see many examples of this. Both the simple and the young need to listen to the instruction of those who know more about life than they do. And really, this points to one of the great tragedies of our culture. And of course, this is not anything new. Obviously, the book of Proverbs was written a long, long time ago. And there were young people that were running headlong to their destruction in that day, just as much as there are today. But it does seem like we're living in a a different cultural moment in some ways in this area. In our culture, and especially over the past few decades, the young are being told more and more that they don't need to look to their elders for wisdom. That really, those who've gone before them don't know anything. And that if they really want to make a way for themselves in the world, they need to figure it out for themselves. And then on the flip side of that, the old are being told that they need to look and act like the young. Right? And we have rock stars that are on Social Security now, or could be, I suppose, you know, and yet they're going out and doing these crazy shows, you know, and they're in their 70s and stuff. Our culture is a culture of perpetual adolescence. It's a culture that worships youth in many ways. I was reminded of this as I came across the refrain of a popular song. I think it's still popular. I don't know. But the refrain goes like this. Tonight, we are young, so let's set the world on fire. We can burn brighter than the sun. You know, like we're going to change this world because we're young. Now, youth is everything in our culture. Well, don't be duped by that mindset, because it's just not true. It's a lie. It's one of those lies, like those commercials, you need to be able to see through it. It's not true. Now, and that's not to say that there's anything wrong with being young. And I'm sure that a lot of us would agree that there are a lot of benefits to being young. Now, childhood can be a wonderful stage of life. But the thing that we must not forget, and this is what our culture has forgotten, sadly, the thing that we must not forget is that the whole point of childhood is what? To grow up. The whole point of childhood is to become mature. Young people need instruction, and old people need to be mature enough to give it to them. So that's the first category of people who need wisdom, the young, the simple. The second category of people who need wisdom is everybody else. Those who are already wise, those who already understand. So really the short answer to the question who needs wisdom is everyone. We all need wisdom. You see that in verse 5. Let the wise hear and understand and increase in learning. And the one who understands obtain guidance. Isn't that interesting? It doesn't say, let the one who understands act according to his understanding. No. It says, let the one who understands obtain guidance. It recognize that you don't know it all yet. That you don't have it all together. That you too are in need of wisdom that comes from outside of yourself. So I think that this is something that, you know, we can always keep in mind. We should never, ever think that we've arrived and that we can just coast through our later years. Don't think that you pretty much know everything that you need to know, because you don't. You still have a race to finish, and you need wisdom to know how to chart your course. And so for all of us, we all need to be teachable for all of our days in this world. And that brings us to verse 7, which really summarizes the theme of the entire book of Proverbs. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and discipline. What does it mean to fear God? Well, to fear God is to have reverence and humility toward God. And this is really talking about the fear that a son would have for his father, not the fear of that a slave would have toward a tyrannical master. So this is what we would call filial fear, the fear of servitude of a servant. This is the fear of a son towards a loving and kind father. To fear God is to recognize your creatureliness and your dependence upon God. It's to acknowledge God's holiness and His perfect wisdom. The person who fears God wants to learn from God. He wants to know how to please God. He wants to turn away from evil and surrender to God's will. Now, this verse says that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. And this is something that could be misunderstood, the beginning of knowledge. Solomon is not saying that the fear of the Lord is an elementary stage that you eventually leave behind. You know, it's the beginning of knowledge, but then you move on to other things. That's not what he's saying. On the contrary, the fear of the Lord is the foundation of all knowledge and all wisdom. So really the meaning is the fear of the Lord is the foundation of knowledge. And you don't leave a foundation behind. You build on it. It's kind of like when you learn to read. What's the first step in learning to read? It's learning your ABCs, right? Learning your alphabet. Well, you don't ever advance beyond the alphabet, right? You know, when you're reading, you're using the alphabet the whole time. And it's the same with music. You know, if you're learning how to read music, you need to learn the notes. But you never advance beyond it. That's the foundation for the music. Or if you're learning math, you learn about numbers first, but then you don't leave them behind. You know, I guess you do in algebra, right? You know, X's and, you know, whatever. But, you know, at least in general math, you know, you don't leave those behind. So we never leave the fear of the Lord behind us. It's the foundation upon which the entire Christian life is built. Now, the second half of verse 7 sets a contrast. It sets a contrast between the person who fears the Lord and somebody else. What's the opposite of fearing the Lord? Well, in contrast to the person who fears the Lord is the fool. The fool closes his mind to instruction, and ultimately he closes his mind to God. He's too proud to learn. He thinks that he knows all that he needs to know. Thinks that he knows what is best. The fool is someone who has never understood what C.S. Lewis describes in Mere Christianity in these words. Lewis writes, "In God, you come up against something which is in every respect immeasurably superior to yourself. Unless you know God as that, and therefore know yourself as nothing in comparison, you do not know God at all. As long as you are proud, you cannot know God. A proud man is always looking down on things and people. And of course, as long as you're looking down, you cannot see something that is above you." A very profound thought. It's from Lewis's chapter on pride as the great sin in Mere Christianity, which is a wonderful, wonderful chapter. Well, this contrast between the way of the wise and the way of the fool is really at the very heart of the book of Proverbs. There are only two ways to go in life. There's no middle path. You're either on the path of wisdom or you're on the path of folly. And we need to remember that because we need to remember that we are surrounded by many people who do not fear the Lord. Many people who do despise wisdom and instruction. Many people who are on the path of folly. And so we need to be very careful. We certainly don't want to exalt ourselves above them. We certainly want to recognize that, you know, left to our own devices, we would be going the same way. But we also want to take care that we do not stray onto that path ourselves, the path of folly, because it is the path of destruction, as we'll see throughout Proverbs. Well, in the New Testament, Paul, in his letter to the Corinthians, says that Jesus is the wisdom of God. Jesus is the wisdom of God. And also, he tells us that as Christians, we have been given the mind of Christ. Think of that. You have been given the mind of Christ. Now, those passages show us that salvation in Christ involves being delivered from the path of folly, being plucked out, being taken off that path and put on the path of wisdom. But that does not mean that wisdom comes to us automatically when we become Christians. We shouldn't think that. We need, as Paul says elsewhere in Romans, he says, we need to be transformed by the renewal of our minds. And that's an ongoing process. God doesn't bring that transformation about miraculously. Regeneration is really miraculous. Being born again, that is a miracle. But our sanctification, well, I mean, it is God's work. But he brings it about through natural means, for the most part. And it's the same with the pursuit of wisdom. The way to know wisdom is to acknowledge that you don't have all the wisdom that you need, and to be receptive to the instruction and counsel of those who have wisdom to offer. And really, that is the basic message of the book of Proverbs, and I think that we'll find it very profitable over the coming months. Amen.